We've asked two people to do official responses to Ian's presentation, and then we're going to open up the mic for questions and answers with all three of them after that particular time. As you can see from the listings in your biography, Jennifer Marshall comes with a long pedigree of research, writing, and social science work. With appearances on several of the United States' major political shows, she's also had a variety of work experiences in social policy, including Empower America, and was Senior Director of Family Studies at the Family Research Council. She's now the Director of Domestic Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. There she oversees a wide variety of activities that determine the character of American culture, education, marriage, family, religion, and civil society. Ms. Marshall directs the think tanks Richard and Helen DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society. Her book, Now and Not Yet, Making Sense of Single Life in the 21st Century, is available in the book table up front. She's been a driving force and inspiration for many of us, literally around the world, where she's opened up lines of communication between many like-minded individuals and organizations. It's my pleasure to have you here, Jennifer. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here and truly exciting to see this conference take shape. I hope that many good things come of it, and I'm just really proud that you've been able to do this here and proud of all the team and good to be with the friends at IMFC. And it's also an honor and a privilege to be able to respond to Ian Duncan Smith today. He and Tim Montgomery and Philippa Stroud at the Center for Social Justice have been hugely influential for many of us in spurring us to think differently about social breakdown and about human need and why and how we might address it. Some of these ideas, of course, have been batted around in U.S. policy circles in recent decades as well. They've been expressed in the forms of welfare reform or school choice or some new initiatives for social service delivery with the faith-based initiative. There are so many examples that I could name, but for the most part, these have been standalone initiatives, like staccato notes. We've had a few attempts to string them together into something larger, but they have not yet, they've only been faltering attempts so far. So we've lacked this melody or the narrative that will capture the moral imagination of the American public and transform their ideas about society. And that's why I think the work that Ian Duncan Smith and the Center for Social Justice are doing is so important. They are achieving a real breakthrough in British society and British public opinion in helping people to think about society as the central question of governing today. Well, I've been asked to respond to Ian from a social perspective, social issues perspective, and I want to draw on our American experiences as I do that. So I first want to begin by introducing you to two young people from Washington, D.C., Tiffany and Josh. Both of them are black, both come from low-income families, both are from hard neighborhoods. Tiffany's mother had struggles of her own, and that made it difficult for her to provide for her daughter. So she was raised by her grandmother. Tiffany showed a lot of promise, and her grandmother wanted to do the best by her for her academic future, but the assigned public schools in their neighborhood were some of the worst in the city of Washington, and her grandmother didn't have the means to send her to private school. When Tiffany was about 12, her 17-year-old cousin was killed. He had been the hope of the family, doing really well in school, looking forward to college. Tiffany was profoundly affected by this event and vowed to fulfill his dream and the dream of their family by herself going to college. That might have remained a distant dream had it not been for a scholarship that helped her to escape her local public high school and to instead attend a Catholic high school where it was safe and they had very excellent academics. She did well, so well in fact that she graduated at the top of her class, valedictorian, in 2008. And now Tiffany has just started her second semester at Syracuse University in New York, where she's doing very well. And you can imagine the pride and joy of her family at that achievement. Well, Josh grew up in a similarly troubled neighborhood in Washington. It wasn't a place that encouraged young people to aim high. But Josh and a little band of his childhood friends decided that they were going to make it out. They were going to make it to college. Well, their neighborhood school proved to be more of a hindrance than a help in that goal. It was poor quality and prone to violence. Josh's family could not afford themselves to attend a private school, send him to a private school. But his mother heard about the voucher program. They applied, and he was one of the fortunate few who was able to get a scholarship, and he attended a Catholic high school as well. He is now in his first year of university in North Carolina. Well, that's a happy ending as far as it goes. But Josh can't go back home, quite literally. His family has decided that he will spend vacations and school breaks outside the city with relatives. The risk is too great, his mother says. Better to spend Christmases without him than to have him come back home to their neighborhood and risk losing it all after having gotten so far. So imagine all the hopes of getting Josh across that finish line of graduation, only to not be able to carry on regular family life because the surrounding culture is so toxic. Well, there are a few things I want to highlight from these stories of Tiffany and Josh today. First of all, each of them had personal hopes, high aspirations, exactly the kind of values and motivation that you would want to see in a young person. But the status quo not only didn't help them get ahead, it actually worked against them. Second observation, each of them succeeded because of external expectations around them as well. Schools that demanded more, a culture of expectations from those closest to them. Relationships were critical. Family members who sacrificed, prioritizing their learning. A grandmother's hope in the case of Tiffany, a countercultural group of friends in the case of Josh. Finally, from an educational point of view, these are success stories. But they are not success stories in terms of transforming community. Social breakdown shows up in a variety of complex ways, even in these brief stories about Tiffany and Josh. And restoring society is going to require holistic new ways of tackling these problems. Well, the reason I'm telling this American story to a Canadian audience in response to a British speaker is that I want to highlight the universal elements in restoring society, the elements we can transfer between our respective political and cultural contexts. And there are a number of ideas that have been prompted by the work of Ian and the Center for Social Justice, but today I want to focus on three observations concluding from this. The first of all is the nature of society and why it should be at the center of our concerns about government. The second is the nature of effective strategies to overcome social breakdown, strategies consistent with our conservative outlook. And third, why social justice is a compelling idea for presenting this vision. So first, society. If society is the central question of governing today for us to consider, what are its essential elements? Well, I think that begins with family. Family centered on healthy marriage, free to exercise its legitimate authority, and strong enough to exercise that authority. Family is, after all, the first school of self-worth, self-government, aspirations, and relationships, as we've heard this morning. No other institution or agent can equal its capacity to provide for the welfare of the next generation. The family is embedded in community and depends on surrounding supportive institutions, and that's the second key element of society. These institutions reinforce the family in its central role. They include churches, schools, community, and the thousands of private associations that make up our networks. These have unique authority that works in more subtle ways than the power of the state to motivate good behavior. Consider who you would like to be enforcing order in your neighborhood. Gang leaders, armed police, or that busybody on the corner who nags you every time that you don't get the trash bins in a timely manner, and who always seems to know when mischief is afoot in the part of the kids and stands out on her porch to watch. Well, that gets to the third element of society, the habits and values that sustain our life together in self-governing community. These include trust, work ethics, individual responsibility, mutual responsibility through relationships, confidence in distinguishing right and wrong, respect for human life and human dignity, living within our means, just to name a few. Well, if society is the individual rooted in stable family, embedded in community that's made up of supportive institutions, nurtured by sustaining values and habits, then we are far from a good society. We're far from stable family formation in the U.S., when 4 out of 10 children are born to an unmarried mother, and 7 out of 10 black children. School is far from a supportive institution when in our nation's capital, 1 out of 8 students reports being assaulted with a deadly weapon. And we're far from sustainable values when a young man like Josh has successfully navigated DC public schools, made it to college, but can't come back home. As Ian has pointed out, social breakdown has reached levels that we cannot afford to ignore, economically or morally. So how do we address social breakdown? Well, the character of interventions matters, and the interventions that Ian has alluded to today are what I would call pro-society. Pro-society interventions respect and seek to restore the family, community, and sustaining values and habits. This contrasts very sharply with what we've seen in the United States for the past half century. For decades, American policymakers on the left have barricaded themselves behind cash handouts and bureaucratic paperwork and declared themselves to be waging a war on poverty. Well, their strategy has failed. They failed because they thought the problem was all about material deprivation, and they responded with spending. That has built bureaucracy, but it has not restored society. And too often, it has hurt the very people that it was intended to help. A second issue going on in the United States, and I think in your cultures as well, is that rather than cultivating sustaining values, we've engaged in social experiments that have eroded the family and community stability. They've marginalized important institutions like religious groups that have vast resources to contribute to the common good. The well-to-do and the middle class can manage through social experimentation because they have thick social networks that can easily double as safety nets. But neglecting sustainable values has wreaked havoc on low-income and at-risk communities who often have little safety net other than the government to fall back on when families fail and communities crumble. In the United States, we talk a lot about the American dream. It's each generation's hope that their children's reach will exceed their own grasp. For most of American history, children were able to reach higher by standing on the firm foundation built by their fathers. But in recent decades, we've treated the building blocks like marriage, moral order, work ethic, as though they were optional rather than foundational. And we're finding out that it's awfully hard to reach higher without them. Well, it's not all bad news. At the same time, we do have some examples of pro-society successful interventions in the United States. And these include welfare reform and the school choice initiatives that I mentioned before. Welfare reform transformed a program of permanent handouts that encouraged lifetime dependence into one that offered a hand up through work and stable family formation through marriage. As a result of that 1996 reform, welfare rolls were reduced by half. Black child poverty reached its lowest level in American history. It was one of the most dramatic reforms and successful reforms in recent American history. Second example is school choice. In 2004, Congress passed the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program, allowing about 2,000 low-income students, including Josh and Tiffany, to be able to attend safe and effective schools and escape the broken public school in Washington, D.C. Just so you have some background on that, Washington spends more per pupil than any of the 50 states and yet falls dead last in terms of academic achievement. Almost half the students don't even graduate from 12th grade, and it's notoriously violent, as I've already mentioned. The scholarship program, by contrast, allows parents to exercise their authority to choose their children's education, an effective and safe school that supports them in their role. Not surprisingly, parents are extremely satisfied with this program. Test scores are going up. Students feel safe. It's all pointing in the right direction. Well, regrettably, both of these policies, welfare reform and DC vouchers, are in peril because of the new team that's in charge in Washington, D.C. But they remain examples of interventions that seek to restore society. What they don't exemplify is the kind of systemic, comprehensive, rhetorically unified policy strategy that Ian and his team at the CSJ have outlined in reports like Breakthrough Britain. American welfare reform of 1996 reformed one program. We have 50 more federal means-tested programs that are in demand of a pro-society overhaul as well. And a standalone voucher program like the DC Scholarship Program might give individual students like Josh a shot at escaping a dead-end community, but it won't transform that neighborhood. Well, that means that we need to systematically review social welfare programs to identify where they are eroding society by creating dependence and undermining social institutions. We need to develop solutions that will restore society. And we need to present these ideas in a rhetorically unified and compelling narrative that will inspire the public to rethink social questions of breakdown. And that brings me to the question of social justice. And I want to offer just a few thoughts on this topic in closing. For several years, we've been having international conversations among conservatives about the idea of social justice. And for most of us, the term was new. We weren't familiar with using it. And so we've chewed a lot on it and reflected on it and heard the usage that Ian and others, as you've heard today. Each country, of course, has its own political discourse going on, and this term is thought of differently in different places. But I want to share a few thoughts on why I do think it's a compelling framework for us to address the questions of social stability and breakdown today. This past year, I came across a few helpful ideas on social justice by Michael Novak. You may know Michael Novak as a contributor to First Things, a scholar on religion and free society. He defines social justice as, quote, a specific habit of justice that is social in two senses. Those two senses are these. First, the skills it requires are those of inspiring, working with, and organizing others to accomplish together a work of justice. These are the elementary skills of civil society through which free citizens exercise self-government. The second aspect in which social justice is social is that it aims at the good of society, not at the good of one agent only. And I think that's exactly what we heard from Ian today. But for any of you political philosophers in the room, Michael Novak goes on to conclude, quote, if Tocqueville is right that the principle of association is the first law of democracy, then social justice is the first virtue of democracy, for it is the habit of putting the principle of association into daily practice. The habit of putting the principle of association into daily practice. The other phrase that jumps out to me from that long quote was the elementary skill, that social justice is the elementary skills of civil society through which free citizens exercise self-government. And what I find most profoundly different about the vision that Ian has outlined here today about seeking the good society and mending breakdown is how it calls on the natural resources of a self-governing people and demands society-wide engagement. The problems are cultural and relational, and the resources to overcome them are cultural and relational as well. And because individual transformation is always possible, cultural and relational resources are endlessly renewable. This is very much in contrast with schemes that treat problems as material and segregate society through redistribution of wealth by taking from some and giving to others, creating perverse incentives and undermining sustaining values. The character of our culture very much determines our economic stability and our ability to lead in the world. At this level, the distinctions between economic and social policy just fade away and become artificial. Whether you call it community breakdown or human capital squandered, the result is the same and the solutions are the same. We need strong families, communities and institutions that reinforce them, and sustaining values and habits. We need to spend much more time thinking about governing strategies that put society first. And I want to thank Ian Duncan Smith and the IMFC for taking us one step closer to that. Thank you.
Jennifer, thank you. You have helped that narrative. You've helped to write the story today for us. The foundation of not optional pieces, but mandatory of society, marriage, and family. What inspires others, what inspires our society, the virtues of our daily practice. And for that, we thank you. We'll let you talk more a little bit during the question and answer time in just a few moments here as well.